Okay, so call to order. The meeting is called to order at, I have 8:35 Eastern Time. Roll call, Kim Laird is present. Kevin Axtell is absent. Matt Hall?
Present.
Richard Kennison?
Present.
Dave Pawson?
Present.
Tom Wall?
Present.
Aaron Stevens?
Present.
Recording Secretary Brandy Axtell is absent. Future Fest Director, Future Fest Site Director, Mike Sullivan? I'm sorry, is he here, Marilyn?
I hear him.
Oh, okay. Okay, Mike, I couldn't tell whether I heard you or not. Is Martin Frost, Communications Director, here? Okay, Martin Frost is absent. We need the approval for the agenda tonight. Someone to approve tonight's agenda?
Motion to approve.
Okay, Matt has it. We need a second, please.
Second.
Okay, Aaron's the second. And any changes, corrections? Hearing none. Anyone opposed to approving?
Really
the,
quick, Jim.
Oh, go ahead.
Did you add anything about treasurer?
I did not. I figured we would talk about it in Varia only because I did not get a chance to call either Holly or John.
Okay.
I'd rather put that in Varia. Okay. Anything else? If not, anyone opposed to the approval of the agenda? Any abstentions? Tonight's agenda is approved. We need a motion to approve the minutes from September 21st, which I did not get from Brandy. So do we have a motion to table this?
Motion to table.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Anyone opposed to tabling? Abstentions? Okay, that will be tabled then. I also do not have, I apologize to all of you, I still did not type out the minutes from the July meeting from the AGM. So could I have a motion to table the approval of those?
Move to table.
Okay, Dave has the motion.
This is Matt, seconded.
Okay, anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, moving on to reports. Mike, do you have anything on future festivals?
Yes, the board needs to approve a 2013 fest site as soon as possible, the sooner the better. And need some direction on 2014 fest sites. I posted an item on Board Plus about 3 weeks ago, and have not had a single comment. We have the whole universe of options open to us as far as colleges and universities, but I'd like to know what the board wants me to look for. Is it college universities? If so, where do they come from? And not, then are we in all we've been with? And if so, where do you want to go? So I'm ready to help the IJA, but I would like some direction so that I'm not wasting another time.
I can only speak for myself here, Mike, but I like the idea personally of 2014 really taking a good strong look at San Francisco like you had suggested.
All right, well, that would be University of California, Berkeley, and they've reached out to us. I'll ask them for a proposal. Our more immediate need is for 2013, and proposals in front of us, one is a college campus, one is a return to Lexington under very favorable terms.
Right.
And the thing did not pan out, but I don't think we would be happy with Des Moines as a choice. Dayton, Ohio, likewise. So at this stage, those are the only two bid offers we have for 2013.
Okay, and I do have a motion on the agenda tonight to approve a site for 2013.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. You're welcome. Thank you.
And, Mike, one thing I wanted to ask, I know last meeting we had requested just an email for the board to give feedback on potential location. Did you post that to the Board Plus instead? Was that did that make sense?
No, I don't know if I heard everything you asked. You go again, or Aaron.
Okay. I can only hear you a little bit, Mike. I don't know what's going on, but you're cutting in and out a lot.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think we had asked, yeah, just to get feedback on where you'd heard from, and then the board can get feedback where we would prefer, or different ideas.
Yes.
From.
Yeah, that was at the last board meeting. I said that I would let the board know where we had options for colleges and universities, and about a week later I posted on Board Plus a link to a website that represents colleges and universities for meetings like ours, and asked for people to look at the list and give their input on where we should look. There are hundreds of them in every part of the country, and they would all give us probably similar terms. So really what I'm looking for is some way to save time, and rather than ask everybody for a proposal, find out where the board wants to go.
Right. Okay.
I was on Board Plus some time ago. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to look at it yet, but where we're at.
Thanks, Mike.
Sure.
So maybe could we commit as a board to getting on there and looking and giving feedback to Mike within the next couple weeks, potentially?
I would say that within the next week would be great if we could. So that he has direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got, thank
and
you.
We can
I've got
more.
Universities from New York to California and even further away, Maine and New Hampshire are interested in us, and I just want to know where we're supposed to go. And, you know, if 2013 will be decided tonight, then do we want to focus on a campus university setting for 2014 or consider all the options that we have, which of course include traditional locations like cities and places we've been to before?
I think keeping our options open is a good thing. And looking at both college. I mean, I'd love to really start going back to college campus idea, but transportation is always the thing that concerns me there. Although a lot more colleges have gotten a lot closer to airports, so. But I would prefer keeping the options open. I don't know how anyone else feels.
I'm ready to vote tonight for sure. I mean, I'm definitely there, I think.
For 2013,
But I am for 2013.
I'd say, yeah, within the next week, if we could all get on Board Plus and really give some good feedback to Mike based on what he's just asked, specific locations, and also what our vision is as far as college campus versus hotel, whatever, mm-hmm. would be great for 2014.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Mike? Okay, Mike, we'll do our best here, okay?
Thank you.
Like I said, we have it on the agenda tonight for 2013, so we should be able to get that cleared up tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. 2012 Fest, Matt.
All right, so at this point, we have Pavel Yuskovic confirmed as our main guest, our priority one guest, I should say. And I'm working with him to make sure he gets his visa squared away in plenty of time. And he has agreed to do so as far as agreed to attend for expenses. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
He's not looking for a lot of money, and that's obviously a good thing. EAO, the group from Belgium, has agreed to come essentially for expenses. And it's just a question of whether we can afford those expenses, and that may be where the grants might help us out. So as far as guests, those are two that are – one is confirmed, and the other one I'd like to confirm depending on how the money goes. We're still waiting to hear from Alan Sulk. Doug Sayers has agreed to be in the Cascade of Stars for 2012 with a new routine he's working on. And he's just going to be at the festival, so he literally didn't ask for anything. But I might go so far as maybe, hey, you want a comp or something like that, or see if he really needs something, you know, because I know he's just starting out. He's not making a lot of money. But he stayed with me just 2 weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, I'm down. I'm going to be there anyway, so I'm down. So that's cool because it's been tradition, or at least in the past, you know, you see the winners of previous IGA competitions come back and do the Cascade of Stars, and Doug hasn't done that yet. He won in 2009 and then again in 2010. So 2 years later, we'll put him back on stage for the Cascade of Stars. So that's nice. Next topic, I think, is comps. I've been calling people from previous year's teams, people who I'm interested in kind of continuing, saying, hey, you did a great job. I like what the work you've done so far. And I'd like you to do it again, but I'd like you to do it, if possible, without the benefit of a comp to the festival. In other words, paying full freight. And so far, every single person I've called has agreed to do so. Mm-hmm. Len Furman is doing joggling. And then I haven't talked to all the board members. Richard, I hadn't called you yet. But that's something we can talk about as a board as well. And then who else? I got Annie Shepherd. She says she's going to think about it. She might need some help. But once again, she's going to make that decision. Tony Steinbeck has expressed interest in doing it for vendor coordinator again. And he said, if he's going to be able to come and he can afford it, then yeah, he doesn't want to comp or anything. He's got some other, engagements that might prevent him from coming. But if so, he could still do. He said he'd be willing to do, vendor coordinator, the part that comes before the festival. If he can get somebody else on site to help, much in the same way he and Tom did it last year. So, and then who else? I'm missing. I'm definitely missing a couple names because I talked to a few other people. Warren Hammond, Jim Maxwell, these are people that might be helping out with championships and or Cascade of Stars. They've all agreed. So far so good. I still probably got maybe another 20, 25 calls that I want to make, and I'm just going down the list. If I had my way and if my wish comes true, then this will be almost essentially a comp-free festival with everybody paying full freight, and we can save a fair amount of cash that way.
That's awesome.
And a chill filled the room.
Yeah, you and I have discussed this. I think that's great.
Me as well.
Yeah, Richard. Yeah, sorry, Richard. I didn't want to put you on the spot like in the meeting or anything. I just hadn't gotten down the list yet. I still haven't talked to of other people as well.
Oh, that's fine. That's just fine. That's
okay.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, between the performers and Dan Holtzman, you know, like I'm just talking to people and explaining what our situation is. And most people, before I even make the pitch, go, yeah, it's fine. If they can afford it, they can afford it. And, you know, like 250 isn't going to make or break a lot of people. You know, Annie is a little different case. You know, she's young. She's from Humboldt.
She's from Humboldt.
That's all you need to say, right? You know, like, so that's fine. I had a long talk with Ivan about filming and editing. And so, you know, I mean, I know he's done his contract for 2011 Festival. That video is in the can. As far as 2012 and who will be filming and how the festival will be filmed and presented, that is something that I don't know yet. Ivan certainly is not interested in editing the video for less than his full amount, and that's fine. You know, I'm not gonna argue with him on that. Hold on 1 second. I've got the janitor in my school now outside my room with a vacuum. 1 second. Oh, shut up. Anyway, you could hear that, right?
Yes.
So I'm almost of the mind where I want to talk to Jayco and Henry and see where they're at as far as filming and how much filming they're willing to do for free.
Taylor Glenn is another one.
Exactly. Taylor's my choice for editing because Ivan wants 8,000 to edit
totally.
And film.
Totally.
If I get Henry and Jayco to film, you know, for free or for a minimal amount, then I go to Taylor and I say, hey, you want the editing credit? We'll give you $1,000 or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know? On the one hand, I don't want to disrespect her. You know, if Ivan got 8 and Taylor gets 1, that's obviously a big difference. But on the other hand, she's young, and, you know, hey, $1,000 or $2,000 is good money, and it's a resume credit. So
yeah, she also wants it on her, in her
business. Exactly. She's building a portfolio. I get that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to be respectful of people's time and talents, but I also want bottom dollar. So I'm just going to keep calling people and having conversations and see if they're open to the prospect. Ivan said he would film. He's like, dude, I'll film the championships for free. I'll film them. He's like, but just so you have the footage, you know, I'll film the championships and the Cascade of Stars for free. But then that footage is just, what do we do with it? So because Taylor doesn't have the high definition cameras that Ivan does, Taylor's camera, he films for 15 minutes. She's got to change batteries or change cassettes. So my question for the board is, should I, you know, are we still shooting to create a full, you know, DVD for the festival? Are we looking to streamline the process and at the very minimum get archival footage, and then anything else we put out either becomes a download that people can pay for or a free download, and we just put it out for everybody? And say, hey, here's a free, you know, IJ festival montage, you know, such as happens all the time on YouTube. Where do you guys think I should go with that? What avenue should I pursue?
That's a tough call, Matt, because I know I personally love the DVDs. I actually show them in school to my kids.
Right.
And having that much footage on a DVD is awesome for them.
Right.
But financially, are we going to be able to afford putting out a DVD is the next question. In fact,
probably not.
That's something I had in the various section for tonight, too. I've talked with Ivan after the Sparks Festival about trying to figure out how to do a download, a paid download, but we couldn't figure out how to make the clips small enough but interesting enough at the same time to be able to do that. You know, technology may have changed in the last 2 years. So,
does anyone have a rough number of how much it actually costs to put the DVD out, aside from Ivan's fees?
With Ivan's fees.
Without Ivan's fees.
Without Ivan's fees.
Yeah, take out 8,000 or whatever number
you got. It's another $4,000.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't made money on the DVDs in how long? A while, right?
It's been at least 3 years.
Yeah, because I know June from Naranja, and you know, and Dubai, and the people, the vendors who buy them from us, they buy a certain amount of DVDs, but we're not making 4,000, not even close.
Well, we kind of pay for the DVD itself for the replicating, but we never cover the full amount of editing and production fees.
Yeah, and part of that's Ivins. You know, Ivins a big ticket, so we just can't afford him.
Totally.
And he understands that. Oh, sorry.
I just said I would say talk to Taylor Glenn and see, you know, what's realistic for her to potentially do. And come up with some kind of budget for it, and then we can see if it's realistic as we get closer.
Yeah, Tom and I had some discussion around this in Portland, and I think my take was sort of, especially these days, I don't think we can justify spending that much just to make the DVD to try to sell if we don't sell anywhere near enough of them to cover the costs. Now, there's other things that might make sense. So if we got in a position where we're like, well, we have to cancel the magazine, and we need to give people something until we have a better story, something like replicating DVDs is pretty well leveraged, because if you can say, all right, once we've done the upfront work to get the video edited, if every incremental DVD costs $4 per member, it's probably, in perception, worth more than $4 to them.
Right.
So if we said, crap, we can't ship them a magazine, but we could ship them a DVD, and it would be much cheaper than a magazine until we have our story straight. It could fill a role like that, but just doing it to try to make a profit when we know we won't doesn't seem to be defensible at this point. But I agree. Part of the assumption there was that actually filming it is probably the cheaper part of it, and that makes sense to do if only for archival and to keep your options open.
And at one time we did used to make a decent amount of money on the videos and DVDs in the store. That's where a bulk, you know, besides the festival, that's where our next bulk of money came from. With the, you know, the surge on YouTube and Juggle TV and things like that, people just don't buy DVDs as much. That's why if we could find a way to do short 5-minute clips that, say, cost $1 to download, I think that would be a way for us to get a little bit of revenue in, maybe more than we're even making right now, and we wouldn't have to worry about production costs as far as replicating the DVDs.
Okay.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a model that would be worth looking into as well. Because, I mean, if it would save us all the cost of selling it off your replicator and dealing with a lot of fancier editing, you know, just have each competition. I mean, maybe that wouldn't save a whole lot of editing time, I'm not sure. But I'd like to see that priced out against an actual physical DVD thing. That said, like, the idea of this is the same conversation we've had about the magazine, you know, having something that's physical, you know, people attribute a lot of value to that, whereas, you know, if they spent, you know, $30 online and all they got was, like, a little code that they typed in and they download stuff, that's not necessarily the same tangible benefit as getting something in the mail, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, download is the way of the future, so to speak, streaming, download, or free. I'm certainly not wedded to making people pay for things. I mean, once again, we offer the product out there, give them a taste. You know, and they see, oh, hey, the IJ is trying to win us back with good stuff and good product. And if we have to give it for free, then we give it for free, although financially maybe that's not viable either. But, I mean, geez, Jay, Wes, all those guys, Michael Karras is offering paid downloads, videos that are 40 minutes long. Certainly we can offer downloads that are 40 minutes long. We just have to offer 3 of them that would cover the festival, or 4 of them, you know, 40 minutes. A 40-minute montage or montage of games and juggling and ex-juggling, and then another 40 minutes you showcasing juniors, and another 40 minutes of, you know, individuals and teams, and another 40 minutes of Cascade Stars, and that's 4 or 5 downloads. And, you know, you either give them for free or you give one for free, and if you want to download the other 4, it's $5 per. That's $20 if they download all 4.
Yep.
Might make some money.
And more people are going to download them than selling DVDs, I would guess. We can market it better too.
Well, and that also saves us all the post costs as well, which those rates are going up now too. So,
yeah, dissemination of the link is one email to every member, one post on rec.juggling, hey, want to see the festival videos? Boom, here's the link. Go. I mean, once again, Jay, Wes, and all those guys, they're not, you know, Google, you know, mad scientist computer geniuses, and they're doing it. Surely we can find somebody to do it, right?
Right.
Hell, we can ask them to do it. they figured it out.
Harris, what he does to make it happen.
Yeah, Michael Karras, help
cheap,
us.
You know?
How do you do this?
Yeah, because obviously there's a cheap, affordable way because they're probably not paying out the wazoo for it.
Yeah, none of those guys have big money to do this, and yet they do it. That's their – Tony Pezzo did it. I mean, come on.
That's fundraiser.
Right. That's our thing. Like, if they can all do it, surely we can figure out how to do it or get somebody to do it for us.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to go. And we just have to research it more. So maybe we can get Taylor on that to research what's the best way to do the downloads. I know we have the capability in the store to charge and to even do a member pricing or member free and non-member pricing.
Beautiful. Exactly.
I know that capability is in the store because I checked it out after Sparks.
Right.
So, it'll be available with the new website as well.
Right. So.
Sweet. Also, I think more promotional videos for free after the festival I think is a fantastic idea. I think when I'm assuming Ivan put out that youth showcase highlights clip.
He did.
Okay. Yeah, I had no idea where that came from, and suddenly I saw it and was like, whoa, we have another clip. Sweet. It wasn't just the DVD promotional video, but another one. I think little highlight videos like that from us is fantastic because obviously other people are putting it out, but getting it on our YouTube page and showing that we're providing that material to the juggling public would be great. Also, more stuff promoting, like, the winners of the competitions. Like, hey, here's a little preview of Tony Pezzo's routine, plus after interview of, you know, after he won his medal, how do you feel type thing, and more promotion of those guys would be cool, too.
Yeah.
Okay. So any more questions or comments for Matt or from you, Matt?
Yeah, no, this is the kind of conversation I was hoping to have. And so, like I said, when I start making some more of those calls, I know exactly what I can tell people and talk to people about and what to promise, what not to promise kind of thing. So far, it's like I said, it's been good. I'm optimistic that the team will all be ready to go and already work. You know, Len Furman has almost got juggling done in the can, so that's nice.
That's incredible.
yeah, he's the guy's all over it. He wanted to include juggling as part of the, how should we say, sign up. When we do sign ups.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-reg, we want to include a juggling item because I didn't even know this, but they charge $10 for juggling.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's been the case the last couple of years. So for Len's sake, and I think it just makes sense so that we can know exactly how many people we're going to have for juggling and how we can budget the resources for that event. Let's add a line item on the pre-reg for juggling.
Are you going to do the same then for – because isn't there a fee also for individual prop?
Individual prop comp is still not – it's not sure it's going to happen.
Okay.
And that's not because there's nobody who doesn't want to do it or anything, but Michael and I have been talking – Michael Karras and I have been talking about it, and we may hold off a year and kind of rebuild up the desire because it's gotten a little stale in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And then one other thing that Len Furman brought up that I want to bring up with you guys is juggling moved to Saturday morning. Any thoughts? Boom. Straw poll.
Fine with me. I mean, so long as it doesn't conflict with anything that, you know, similar parties would be interested in. You know, if we do juggling at the same time as, like, club gathering, I don't think anybody's going to care.
Today is a very busy day, Matt, and the games start before noon. So with juggling going at least until noon, it may be a conflict for some people.
Yeah, part of it depends on Len talked to the Jugheads because they're his primary client, so to speak, you know, the clientele. And they were in favor of it provided, but they're also worried about comps. You know, if comps are on Thursday and Friday, then maybe Saturday morning isn't a great idea. As far as games are concerned, one thing I'm looking at for the schedule is dividing the games into 2 days, Friday and Saturday. Such as I've seen done at other festivals. So that might give us a little more wiggle room on Saturday, but I'm still kind of ambivalent. I don't know, you know, what's wrong with Wednesday morning, such as it has always been.
Yeah, Wednesday is good, and also the track may not be available to us on Saturday because it could be used by the university.
Len has found several tracks at various distances and costs, and so we are sorting those out as we speak. But anyway, so that's good. Dave Pawson, workshops? Yes, no?
I'm thinking so, because it sounds like we have a treasurer.
Yahoo!
Okay. Just making sure, brother, just making sure. And then last but not least, Fun Fund. I'm not the chair. You know, I know people have contacted me because I was the previous chair and said, hey, are we going to do this? When are we going to do this? I think we need to get moving on that almost immediately because that's $25,000 that we need to decide how it's going to be spent. Because how that money is spent is going to affect what budgetary priorities I make with the general money. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Do you have any? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just asking who is in charge of that this year? Who's chairing that?
We don't have a person selected yet.
Right.
I think Kevin had definitely shown interest.
Yeah, Kevin Axel said to me that he's down for chairing it. Warren Hammond is interested in joining again. Megan Newis. I mean, we've got people who want to do it, but we just got to start. We got to start meeting.
Right.
Yeah, in the absence of not knowing any other names, I had tried to plant the idea in Warren's head in Portland of possibly chairing it. I don't know how well he took to that idea, but...
Yeah, Warren's up for a couple things. And then James Hendrick also emailed me and said he is not able to do championships this year.
Okay.
Matt, that's something I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, Richard, you are next on the list to have a phone conversation with me.
Yeah.
So that will most likely happen this weekend if you're free.
Yeah.
I'll call you this weekend then.
So maybe talking to Kevin too or Warren, whoever might be interested in chairing. I know we chose a board member last year for chair, but it could have just been because it was Matt. I don't know.
Yeah.
That way the chairperson also reports back to the board, and so if it's a board member, it's okay. But check with Kevin, and if we could vote on it by next month, who's chairing it, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, last year it was me, Dave and I. You know, Dave, you know, was on it last year, and now he's a board member. I don't see any problem with him being on it again just because experience, you know, is good, I think.
Yeah, some continuity would be good. I don't think we want to swap out everybody from last year.
Right. Slam and Andy I've talked to Slam and Andy. He's working on Renegade for me, so that's good. And he's doing it for free, of course. So, you know, I've got some names for Fun, but we gotta coordinate and make sure it happens sooner rather than later.
Well, what we can also do, Matt, is if we know that either Kevin or Warren, we can check with Kevin first, but if he says he's definitely interested in chairing, we can always draw a poll on the forum first. If we take a straw poll vote from the board, then they can get started even quicker than next month's meeting.
Right.
Yeah. Personally, I kind of like the idea of the chair being somebody that's not on the board.
Cool.
For no other reason than just, you know, making SAG. It's making it so it's not just the same seven people that have all the responsibilities. I mean, we need to start delegating more outside of ourselves.
Definitely.
Yep.
And I think, you know, so long as there's oversight, you know, and we have people that are involved that have experience with the same thing, it would be kind of hard to go wrong so long as the chair is somebody that's dedicated to the cause.
Yep.
All right.
Talk to Warren and Kevin. Matt, can you do that?
Yeah, I'll talk to Warren and Kevin and find out which one is down, and then it's a matter of making sure. Like we had several people show up at the Fun meeting at the festival, you know, several months ago, who expressed interest in being on the committee, and I certainly want to make sure that their names go in the hat, or that we just have, you know, instead of seven, we have nine or what have you. I just got to make sure we kind of cast a wide net and make sure we're not leaving anybody out.
Right. Matt, one question I have about the comp situation. Did you want that put on as a motion? I had sent that to you in an email, but I didn't know if you want
to. I should get back to you because I figured we could talk about it offline, so to speak, or at least it doesn't have to be. I don't think it has to be an official motion, just because we don't want to come off as overly, I don't know, you know.
As pompous?
not pompous, but just so structured that now it's law. If it's law, then
yeah, that's fine.
To go against it. If it's just a gentleman's agreement or a gentlewoman's agreement between me and the people I talk to, then that's certainly more flexible, so that if and when there's cases where somebody says, look, I really need some help. I need some help. I need a comp. And if we've got the money, then they can get. I can give that to them, especially if it's somebody who I truly want on the team. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Right. The comp, no comp thing has nothing to do and is not a referendum on anybody's performance or my personal feelings for them. It's merely a fiscal reality and necessity at this point. But it is in some part motivated by philosophy. And so I want to tell people, hey, man. You know, love for you to do it. And if you can do it for free, even better. You know, but if not, let us know. I don't want that to be the deal breaker. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. I just wanted to double check with you.
Yeah. No, that's fine. So that's my long-winded report about the festival. So far, so good.
All right. Thanks, Matt. All right. We'll move on to financial. Holly sent the quarter two and quarter three financial reports. I did forward them to all the board members. So please look through those when you have a chance, if you haven't done so already. And comment directly to Holly if there are any questions that you have for her. Feel free to speak with her. John Nickel has sent an email saying that he is interested in volunteering for the treasurer position. He and I have had one or two other email conversations since that initial email, and I do need to call him. I just emailed him again tonight to ask him if I can call him tomorrow, what number would be the best to call him at. One thing I just want to talk to the board about financially is Holly's contract is up at the end of October. And in our present financial situation, where we're looking to cut corners, I'm not exactly sure we can afford the $10,000 a year that it is costing. With the permission of the rest of the board, I would like to see if John is interested in keeping up the books as Holly has been, but then using Holly, even if it's as a comped consultant, you know, a couple hundred bucks here or there, if necessary, like for doing the 990 or whatever. But I'd like to kind of feel out the waters between John and Holly to see if they'd be okay with that. I know Holly has always told me that if the board ever found a volunteer to take over the monthly bookkeeping, she would be fine with that. But how do you guys feel about seeing if John's willing to take over the bookkeeping as well as just the general treasurer duties and seeing if Holly's willing to be a basically a paid consultant when we need her.
This is Tom. I think that that's a nice idea. When I talked to I met John at the Portland Festival this year, and we talked to some extent, some length about the realities of the position, and it struck me as though he was enthusiastic about doing it so long as he did have some kind of support from a bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not entirely sure. I mean, this is a conversation that we had, several weeks ago. I think it'd be good to talk to him about it, but just know that at least my understanding of his understanding is that there, he wouldn't be the only person doing the job.
Right.
So I don't know if the idea of having a consultant that he can go to is as good as having someone full-time in that position.
Well, and that's part of what I want to talk with him about as well.
This is Martin. Can you hear me?
Hi, Martin.
Yeah, I had the conversation with John Nicol at the Portland Fest as well, and his eyes lit up when I said, well, Holly's already doing the bookkeeping. It's like he didn't really want to be doing that.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't broached the subject with him yet at all. It was just a thought I had just recently, actually, because of the financial situation we're in.
Right. My understanding is that maybe we can negotiate a lower rate with Holly, given our financial status.
And that's the other thing that I can do with Holly as well, is see, especially since there are some, she's been keeping the books, but she hasn't been attending meetings and things. So based on that, I may be able to get her to lower her fee. So I'll have a conversation with her tomorrow, as well as with John, if that's all right with the rest of the board, and I'll see what I can negotiate between the two of them.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. All right. Any questions, any other information about financial? If not, we'll move on to website team. Any movement there, Mike or Martin?
Yes.
Yes.
Aaron,
yes.
I forgot.
Everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, since our last meeting, all three of the website team members have been interviewed by our consultant. That's Aaron, myself, and David. And our consultant just today submitted his draft report, which is quite extensive. I haven't had time to go through it in detail.
Incredibly extensive.
But good. I'm glad to hear that, Aaron. And have you had a chance to look over his report yet?
I looked over a bunch of it till my eyes started glazing over. And
okay,
I decided
good.
To pick it up later.
Yeah. Well, I think we can both agree it's very detailed. And it encapsulates, I think, every single need and requirement that the IJA has for a new system. And once we approve this, I'm going to ask for his permission to send this over to the board so that they can all look at it and make sure that we haven't missed anything. Once we've had a chance for the board to review that, then the consultant will proceed to the selection process and provide us with his recommendations for a good, better, and best system to adopt, along with expected costs, benefits, shortcomings, and so on. And I expect all of that to be done by the time of our next meeting. So stay tuned, because a lot of things will be happening pretty soon on this.
Also, he made it clear that this needs assessment is accessible to us, should we choose not to do an AMS system, to send out to others to get bids.
Yes, and in fact,
document to do with it as we like.
Right, and in fact, we have people who have expressed interest in being able to provide a proposal to IJA on our needs, and one is our anonymous donor, and the other is an IJA member who is kind of in this business and thinks he would be able to provide a proposal for us as well.
Great.
That sounds incredible. Good.
Yeah, I'd like us to look into all of those venues just to make sure they were, you know, doing the right thing. I'd like to have as informed an opinion as possible, informed decision as possible.
Right. And then once that step is completed and we've gotten his recommendations, then we'd like to interview the candidate suppliers and have them make a proposal to us that we can present to the board for approval and selection, I guess selection first and approval. And I think by springtime we should be able to anticipate moving on to a new system if we can get the funding from our donor, which they have suggested in the past they are willing to provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it'll be really nice. Can't wait. Okay. Any questions for Mike about website?
No, I mean, does Aaron have anything else to add to that? Like, is there anything?
Yeah, well, I guess the one thing I request from the board is just when that proposal is submitted that we do get feedback as soon as possible so we can get this done by next month.
Sure.
And just and that's on Board Plus, so just making sure board members are checking the forums regularly and responding to things would be super helpful to get things done quicker. One other piece, and I'm just throwing this out there just to give the board a heads up, because one thing I've been concerned about the whole time is the monthly fees of AMS systems. And I did just ask him during our question time, you know, an estimated price that we could look at or the lowest possible price we could look at. And he said after it's established, it's generally the lowest you can get is $6,000 a month, which is $500 a year. So I just figure sharing that now just to know. And obviously we'll have more direct fees later, but it's a good thing to just keep in mind as we're moving forward.
Sorry, could you say those numbers again? You said
said them backwards. Oh, sorry, $500 a month. My boyfriend's sitting right next to me and told me the same thing. it's $500 a month, $6,000 a year. Sorry.
Okay, and that's just to maintain the service. Like, what would happen if we didn't have the money at some point?
Right. I mean, that's just something to think about. Yeah.
The whole service goes down. The whole site goes down.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's another thing. That's another good reason to consider this juggler who, or two other jugglers who are willing to consider putting up a system themselves, not based on an AMS
right.
system.
Yeah, so that's where I'm just saying, just to keep our eyes open. And it'll be interesting to see what he does submit, you know, the fees. Also, because, I mean, even if EWE, for example, was willing to pay the fees for a while, it doesn't guarantee it forever. And then once that's up, what do we do? So it's just something to consider.
Right, yeah. Just speaking candidly, the whole idea of AMS kind of freaks me out, mostly for the financial reasons, a couple of other reasons too. But I'm kind of skeptical of it. I mean, I'm open-minded about it, but I'm also skeptical of the whole idea. I think it might be a little bit too much than what we need. But then I haven't, you know, talked to the consultant. So.
That's exactly where I am. I would want and need more information, but I'm skeptical.
So.
And I think with Mike, I mean, I know I had asked you at some point, you know, is it possible? I think just getting this needs assessment is fantastic for us, and then being able to utilize that for whatever path we end up choosing is great. So this is a great first step, and then we choose the next step from here.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, I have to impress upon everyone that we are at risk of burning out all of our volunteers, and the number of volunteers we can find and train and trust and depend on to do the things the IJA needs to do is getting very small. And the workload that can be relieved by having a modern system would really help in not burning out our volunteers, getting better service to our members, and bringing the IJA into the modern world where we can do things on our website and with outreach and donation drives and so on that we really can't even contemplate now.
Yeah.
There's no reason that can't be done with a different type of system, though, that doesn't cost $500 a month.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about groups that, you know, offer service and all the great things you just mentioned, Mike, not every company or organization that's online right now uses an AMS system. At least to my understanding, again, you know, like this is all coming from a place of love, but it's kind of a place of ignorance too. But my understanding is that it's not as ubiquitous within organizations of our size.
Well, if you guys have some knowledge of systems that are free or cost a lot less that can do the things we need to do, by all means, let us know. But we're talking about a system that might cost $3 or $4 per member per year. And for the benefits that it gives and the fact that we would reduce the workload on our volunteers and be able to manage the IJA much better, I think that's a pretty small expense.
Yeah, sure. Well, I look forward to reading the summary this guy wrote up. So.
It's extensive.
Okay, any other questions or comments about website? If not, Marilyn has sent the membership report, which I included in the agenda that I sent out. Are there any questions for Marilyn? Or Marilyn, do you have any comments? Okay, if not, we'll move on. Erin, anything on education?
Education is going fantastically. We just had a meeting last night, Kim and I, and things are moving in a good direction. We're looking forward to getting our next $5,000 from EWE to start doing fun things like buying juggling balls with the YEP logo and T-shirts for marketing and for building our funds and such. And, yeah, we have 5 active pods right now with, I think, a total of close to 10 active actual groups that those pods are working with, possibly more. So it's going really well.
Yep, it's moving along. Yay.
Well, I have a question.
Sure.
Are we in question time? I'm sorry. Am I being
question away?
Are we in question time? Yes.
Great. I'm just wondering, for the purposes of like writing grants or anything, do you have any numbers about how many youth or children or just people in general that the programs are affecting right now?
I will. That was actually something I was going to send out to the people who are active, is to get a count of all of their youth in their pods and get that to me, and I was going to create a little spreadsheet so that we will have numbers.
Cool, yeah.
Actually, Erin, on the email that I've been putting together that I'm going to send to you before, you know, to be sent out, that was one of the questions I put in there.
Okay. Cool.
Or we can send it separately. It doesn't
matter. Yeah, this one could just go to the active pods, probably.
Yep, that's fine.
Cool. So we'll have that. One other thing on the line of grant writing. One thing we're going to have to look at, just because I took a big grant writing class, both for IJA and YEP potential purposes, and we have some grant writers interested in working with us as well. We need to get our financials audited at some point. This is something Ken's going to look into. I found out getting a financials audited is around $10,000, which kind of, you know, made my jaw drop to the floor. But Kim knows of a resource that offers a very, very great deduction, and we don't know what that means yet. But as far as getting audited financials, it's something that most nonprofits do. There are some ways to get around that in the grant, like saying, hey, we only make this amount a year. It's not realistic for us to spend $10,000 on an audited financial person, but it's definitely for some of the larger grants it's necessary. So another thing for the board to think about.
Yeah, the source that I'm going to look at is through the Arts and Business Council of Philadelphia. They're the people that have helped us to get in touch with the volunteer lawyers for the arts that we have used a few times in the past for different issues. So they've been helpful to us in the past. Hopefully they'll be helpful again this time. Okay, any questions or comments on education? If not, Tom, anything in the marketing front?
Well, things have, at least on the IJ front, for me, have been kind of slow because I've been so busy with other things, which is kind of a change from my normal behavior, I guess. But I sent out a copy of the new formal rules for the video tutorial contest. I don't know if any of you guys have had a chance to look at that. It's basically trying to make it a little bit more, you know, watertight legally, and making it so despite people, you know, uploading videos onto their own accounts, the IJ is going to retain the rights and the distribution rights and rights of sale and everything for these videos. So ideally we'll be able to, we'll amass some kind of an archive of these things and possibly be able to send them out to either Yetpod or put them in props to U-boxes, or, I mean, we could possibly even, you know, sell a promotional DVD of, you know, the greatest three ball videos that the IJ has, you know, effectively commissioned through all this stuff. So with that, if any of you guys see anything glaring in that, I would be really keen to hear about it.
Did you just say that instead of putting it on their YouTube videos, we'd put it on ours? Or YouTube?
No, they're going to put it on their own.
Right.
But we are going to, basically in these rules, when they send their, like the URL to their thing, they also have to send like a hard copy or, a downloadable copy of the original file to me as well.
Cool.
That way we're going to have, you know, everything kind of on file. So in terms of legality, I am a little curious as to what this means for submitting stuff through foreign countries. You know, like if we want some German people to upload a video, for example, you know, we had a couple of Spanish language, or there was one Spanish language video that came in kind of late last year. So I don't think it was officially in the running, but, you know, how we would have the rules translated so that they, you know, I wouldn't want to just translate only the super short form version, and then when they hit I accept, you know, they have to accept the 10-page legal document that they might not be able to read. I don't know really what
it
that...
10 pages?
it's not that long. It's, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 pages long.
Okay, well.
But yeah, so there's sort of a gray area that I need to investigate. Or maybe it's not so gray. You know, I'm just certainly not aware of what the rules are. Yeah, so other than that, I'm contacting judges right now, trying to get some people signed up to be celebrity or panel judges. I talked to Matt for a while about that the other day. I think I talked to Aaron.
Yes.
So I've got a list right here staring at me on my desk of people I need to email. Hopefully I'll get that done this week. But yeah, that's really what I've been up to, just trying to get this stuff sorted out on top of everything else I'm doing. So.
Okay.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Dave. So the main question I had is I looked at it and I pretty quickly said, oh, I see what this is. This is a legal document. So I can read it and all, but for the most part, not being a lawyer, I don't know how much I have to add. I was just curious, what sort of legal resources did you have to draw upon for that?
that is an excellent question. I researched a couple of different contests that are very similar to our own in terms of their format and their, I guess, evaluation process. And this is pulled largely from, I don't have the name of the group in front of me. But it's a major company that's based in the U.S. that held a competition that's almost identical to ours. It was, instead of like a tutorial thing, it was, I like using this product because, and then you had to demonstrate creativity, and there was a panel of people that decided which one that they liked the best, and they got awarded the prize. And a lot of trimming and pushing and pulling, and I, you know, basically swapped out, you know, the group's name for ours in some places and made some changes that I saw. I mean, I'm certainly no lawyer, but without calling upon an actual lawyer, I'm not entirely sure what to do. So far as I don't know how prudent this is either, but.
Yeah, as much as we're having to rely on volunteers a lot, I wonder if there are lawyers within our midst who are willing to at least give it a read and say, yeah, that looks about right. Because I can read it, but I don't know what it's really worth.
Right, yeah, sure.
And even if there aren't, the volunteer lawyers for the arts in Philadelphia there are at our availability as well.
Sure. Is that a group, since you already have a connection with them, Kim, that you would be able to approach with this?
I can approach them if you like, because I'll it's all through that Arts and Business Bureau. So,
okay.
Yeah, I can contact them and see. It usually takes them about 24 hours to get back with a lawyer who has their specialty in that area.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's not an enormous document. It's just.
Yeah, I just like to make sure that we're on the up and up. You know.
Right. And if
Jim?
We get in touch, yep.
Sorry to interrupt. I have overstayed my welcome. I am late to my next meeting. Sorry guys, I got to split.
Okay, we'll see you next month.
Yeah, I'll look for the notice of November meeting.
Okay, cool.
My apologies.
That's okay. Have a good night.
Have good voting.
As I was saying, Tom, I could also ask them about the international aspect if you would like.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm just curious, like, how binding things are. I mean, I would be really surprised if something did arise out of this, like if we had some kind of an issue, but I just want to make sure that we're totally covered.
Right.
I guess since I'm not a lawyer and I'm not, I'm putting a lot of faith in the fact that the documents that I was referencing before were actually, you know, a legally binding thing, and so just kind of a, you know, like a scare tactic kind of deal that, you know, smoke screen or whatever. So yeah, anybody with know-how would be great to hear.
Okay. I may have a chance to give them a call tomorrow, actually.
That would be great.
I'm on a class trip with my kids, so while the kiddies are out wandering around, I can do that.
That sounds perfect, yeah.
Okay. I'll let you know what happens then. Okay.
Cool.
All right. Any other reports for this evening? All right. Hearing none, we will move on to the motions for consideration. Motion A is a motion to approve the festival site for 2013. I purposely did not name either site so that we could discuss this, but we need a motion and a second before we can discuss.
I'll make a motion to approve a site for 2013.
Okay, and a second, please.
I'll second.
Okay, thanks, Dave. And discussion. I'll start, I guess. I love the idea of going to a college campus, but I have to be honest that the transportation to Bowling Green University scares me. And Tom's report also has me somewhat concerned. And as long as Lexington has kind of agreed to clean a few things up, and I don't mean literally clean them up, but as far as the nickel and diming and things that weren't in the contract that we find out later that we had to pay for, as long as we have everything right on the table with Lexington, I would actually prefer to go back to Lexington pending seeing an actual contract from them. Anybody else's thoughts?
I mean, my bottom line is that everything in me says I want to vote for Bowling Green, and the only thing that scares the hell out of me is that Tom, who's the person I would expect to like the idea the most, seems very, very wary.
Yep.
And I don't know how to resolve that conflict.
I have the same conflict going on.
Yep. My concern about the transportation has shifted me to be more favorable towards Kentucky, because I think getting people there is going to be essential. And I know it's in the middle of the country, but still that's ostracizing anyone who's going to fly, as we're trying to really boost international attendance and, you know, attendance from both sides of the country. I just think having it be so isolated has shifted me towards Kentucky.
Right. I have the same thoughts as Aaron. that my reservations give me pause. I certainly would not vote for Bowling Green myself. Having driven there from, another part of the middle of the country. Even though Lexington might seem kind of remote, it's certainly a lot easier to get there than Bowling Green. If those are the two options we really have on the table, I would certainly be leaning towards Lexington myself.
Well, it sounds like we're all pretty, the four of us that are left here.
Isn't Richard still here?
Richard. Sorry, Richard.
That's okay.
You've been so quiet tonight.
I'm just listening.
Richard, how do you feel?
I certainly understand totally why we're going to end up choosing Lexington. I'm probably going to vote for Bowling Green just because I just think it's a different kind of fest that we've been able to offer for a long time. I'm sure on paper and I'm sure in reality Lexington's a better choice, but I'll probably vote for Bowling Green.
Sure.
I would say with my vote potentially going towards Lexington that I am all for a college experience the next year. So, Mike, the more you research, I don't know if Mike's still on the phone. Mike, the more Mike researches, okay, the more you research college campuses, the happier I'll be, because I think that's a great move for us, and at least to try it out for a year and see how it goes. But I just think a more centrally located place for our first college experience would be great.
Right, yeah, I agree with that 100%. College town is great, but I think that all the things that college town would offer are kind of secondary to being able to get people there easily, at least in terms of our needs. I would love for us to research that for, further years, but I think that it's just too remote, personally. So
can I ask a couple questions of Tom and Mike, if he's still there, to help me try to resolve my dilemma?
Go ahead. Hi, guys. Do you want me to interrupt? It's Kevin.
Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
People were worried sick about you.
I was worried about me, too. I'm in Michigan, and coming home from the airport, there was an accident on one of the roads, and we were just sitting in the rain for an hour and a half.
Well, you're here now and say, welcome home. We are discussing the motion to approve a festival site for 2013, so Dave, I believe, had a question of Mike to kind of clarify a quandary going on in his mind.
Okay, so I had two classes of questions. So one, you have people who fly. My perception was that for people who fly, there's going to be an additional cost to get yourself from Detroit to Bowling Green, but if you were willing to do all the math, it would be at least offset by the savings in doing it in a college setting. Do you guys believe that's true?
I do, Dave, because I think the total cost of someone attending the fest once they get to Detroit Airport would be about $400 for the week, inclusive of meals and lodging. And even if they had a car for the week for $200 or so, they would be way, way ahead of a typical city, downtown, convention center, hotel type of arrangement.
Right. And on top of that, there's also, the intangible of sort of having peace of mind of it. Once you pay for the Bowling Green experience, don't have to worry about anything else. You have your place to stay. You have your food. I think it would wind up being about the same, if not maybe even a hair cheaper, for some people at Bowling Green, but others, if you have to fly a long way and you're not entirely sure if you're going to be able to go and it's sort of a last-minute, snap decision, it would wind up being a lot more expensive.
Okay, so... Wait, so explain that last part again?
Take, for example, Kate, when she decided to come to the festival this year, that's somebody that's currently you're familiar with. Like, if
Sure.
That's not necessarily something that somebody in, you know, California or somewhere would be able to deal with. Last-minute travel arrangements to Bowling Green would be a lot more difficult to make for many people.
Okay.
They're not.
With people who fly or people who drive at this point?
Oh, people to fly.
Why? Why? Why would it be harder?
Right, yeah.
Right. I haven't even gotten to the driving people yet. So for the flying people,
you'd have to plan. I'm
saying even once you got to Detroit, you'd still have the additional barrier of figuring out how you were going to get from Detroit to Bowling Green.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Why would it be hard to fly to Bowling Green or to Detroit, wherever you're ending up, if you decide that at the last minute? Why would that be harder at the last minute than 3 months earlier?
More expensive.
It would be more expensive, for sure.
Well, sure, but it could also be more expensive to fly.
Not compared to
the car. Yeah, that's fair.
Why
that's fair.
Would it be more expensive?
Cause
I'm not sure it would be more expensive, Martin. I think that Detroit being the world hub airport with service from every carrier, that it has very competitive flights to Detroit. And once you get to Detroit, because it is a world hub airport, you have a lot of competition for rental cars. And the worst case scenario would be that you would rent a car for the week and drive yourself to Bowling Green. The cheaper way to go would be to go with the IJA shuttle bus if you can arrive and depart during the windows that we would offer such. And if not, then take a private airport car, which would be about $55 each way. So I don't think Detroit is more expensive to go to by air. I think it may be cheaper than a lot of cities we've gone to in the past by air. It is served by pretty much every air carrier there is.
So I think at this point, my take on this is that for people who fly, I don't think the remoteness is a cost issue, but it is a messaging issue because it's more complicated and you need to kind of walk people through that map of how in the end it will end
yes.
up being.
That's market. Right, Dave. I agree with that.
Now, for people who drive, because I don't do that, I think Humboldt's the farthest I've driven for a festival. So help me understand what the difference is for you in driving to Lexington versus driving to Bowling Green.
Virtually none. They're both on I-75. One is north of the other. Other than that, they're in the middle of the United States.
Right. So, Tom, because mm-hmm. if you're concerned Bowling Green's remote, what's the difference in driving to those two?
It's just far away from most major cities. I don't know. The place is just very small, and that's one of the things that put me off initially. I don't think for most people, I think you'd wind up getting more people driving to Bowling Green than you would flying,
mm-hmm.
Just because of that added barrier of having to transport yourself from Detroit to Bowling Green. Though in terms of driving, I think that it's certainly more accessible by car than it is any other way. So
in there was that your guess is if we were to draw the map out, we'd find that Bowling Green is a longer drive for most of the people who might want to drive. Was that part of it?
I don't think that is necessarily the case, but I think that if we were to do a map of, you know, demographics of people that wind up coming, you'd have way more people driving in than flying, and it would kind of turn into a regional festival in that regard. Because it's not as accessible to people from, you know, other corners of the country. But in terms of drivability, I think it's just as drivable as Lexington. Speaking as someone, you know, who has driven from St. Louis to both locations.
Uh-huh.
That's right. And it's only 260 miles between the two, and they're both on I-75.
Right.
So if you've decided to drive, unless you're in Chicago, Minnesota, Wisconsin, if you're in the Midwest or the East Coast, there's really not a whole lot of difference once you decide to drive to go to either one. They're both on the same Interstate Expressway.
Right.
And for those in the Northeast, Bowling Green is closer.
One question. I know we talked about the shuttles, potential shuttles. How often? I know, and it was like the first 2 days of the festival, and the last day or something.
Yeah, I think what we could reasonably afford to offer, Aaron, would be shuttle buses on Monday and Tuesday from Detroit to Bowling Green, and then Sunday from Bowling Green to Detroit.
And how frequently?
Every 2 to 3 hours. So
how many
someone arrives.
How many does that shuttle hold?
55. So each, it would be a large, you know, over-the-road motor coach, luxury motor coach. And if you arrived at 1 o'clock, you might wait until 2 o'clock to depart the airport. But once you do, you are in a comfortable motor coach, and it's 75 minutes, and then you are there. And then you don't have to worry about a thing once you're on campus. Everything else is walkable.
I think one of my concerns would be people getting to their flights on the flip side, on the departure.
Right. Well, buses could depart as early as necessary to make the first departing flights out of Detroit. I mean, that's what buses do.
Yeah.
And we could offer continuous service on Sunday morning from like 6 a.m. till 2 p.m., 4 or 5 trips to get everybody out that wants to reserve a bus trip. And I think the round trip would be $50 to $60 for the IJA to offer that for people who want to fly into Detroit and take our bus service.
And the ride is how long again?
75 minutes. Hour and a half to, 75 minutes to an hour and a half. It's 75 miles, and it's a very quick drive. I've done it twice. You're basically there before you realize it. It's not a bad drive at all. It's all interstate all the way.
You guys really aren't helping much. This is still a very difficult decision.
I know, and that's why it's a very tough decision. I mean, the safe way to go is to go with Lexington.
One thing that Kim brought up about Lexington yesterday that I found interesting is Kim does do a lot of work to get sponsorships and grant money as well, but sponsorship from local organizations in the community. And one thing about Bowling Green is there would be a much smaller pool to draw from for that.
That is true.
Lexington would have a larger pool, and I mean, just more. And she said that in the past they were very supportive at the last festival, so that was something I took into consideration as well.
Well.
Yeah.
Well,
we have a track record with Lexington. They really want us back. They would be very cooperative. They know about our group. They know what we want. They know what we liked from last time and what we want to improve from last time. We know what the facilities are. There's a lot of pluses for going back to Lexington.
Mike, what's the difference in cost to the IJA for the facilities?
Truthfully, Martin, I think they're very comparable. I think we would spend about as much in Bowling Green for facility rental as we had again in Lexington, about $20,000 in costs.
And it's just going to be more for the participants, potentially, just a bit more.
Potentially, Bowling Green offers the participants a lower fest cost. Because of the very much lower cost of lodging and dining.
Yeah, there are some campsites in and around Lexington, Kentucky, though. I mean, I don't think it would be unreasonable, assuming that we don't have, like, a weird hotel room night thing going on, that we might be able to strike a deal with the campsite in the area.
Very few people have camped in the years when we've had camping at Madison.
I camped with a group of 20 or so people this past year, and it was fine. I mean, it was great, and it was like a 10-minute drive, and all of us were certainly happy to do that extra amount of driving. You know, I would have driven for probably 20 minutes or half an hour even, because I wound up spending about $6 a night.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And Winston-Salem has that, and Lexington, of course, has that. Every place that we've been to, I think, within the last 5 years, except for Sparks, had a campsite within a mile or two. It's just not too many people took advantage of it.
Well, one of the things there is that a lot of people didn't really know that they existed. Like, you know, the IJ has never really actively promoted those amenities. You know, we never, granted that, I think that had a lot to do with the hotel roommate situation this past year. But when I told a couple of my friends that, you know, I was planning on camping, a lot of people said, oh, wait, there's camping nearby? That's phenomenal. They hadn't even really bothered to research it because they thought that, you know, a hotel was sort of an inevitability in going to an IJ festival. So I think that if we're able to, you know, if we find ourselves in a position to work with a campsite about figuring out some sort of an IJ rate, or, you know, if we were to go to Bowling Green, you know, we would have to deal with, you know, a shuttle bus cost. You know, why can't we spend that money in Lexington on dealing with, you know, a 2 or 3 times a day shuttle bus that goes from a campsite to, you know, to the festival site? There are a lot of different ways that we could figure out, you know, why Bowling Green is on paper, you know, why it looks nice, and try and make that happen in Lexington.
A lot of people who aren't kind of want to camp. I'm one of them.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people that never go to the IJ festival because it's too expensive would want to camp. They would want to camp. You know, I probably wouldn't have been able to make it last year if I wasn't able to camp.
Well, the Bowling Green residence prices are pretty low.
Yeah, sure.
They're lower than, you know, motels at regional festivals.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no argument there whatsoever. I'm just saying that it is, I would like us to see, you know, if we do wind up choosing Lexington, to be able to make it more affordable for more people, you know, with what resources we have. And I think that that would mean talking to local campsites and trying to figure out some way to attract people that have not been going to the festival because they can't afford a place to stay. And that would be interested in camping. I mean, this past year, you know, we've kind of proven that there is at least some small group of people that would be interested in doing it. And even at the festival, you know, when people asked me where I was staying, when I told them that I was camping, they kind of cocked their heads and said, oh, wait, there's camping here? I mean, some people were also surprised that I was camping because it was so hot for a couple of days. But again,
I
would, you know,
if we promoted that as an element of the festival, like in our promotional video or, you know, just really pushing the camping part, like, yeah, camping 10 minutes away, you know, just putting it out there, that it would attract more people who otherwise would say immediately, I can't afford it. You know, that would be their first thought. It does provide another option.
This is Richard. And in Lexington, on our brochure that Martin and I worked together on, we had camping listed in where it was, and it was 10 minutes away, or it was probably 20 minutes away.
Okay.
Sure.
But I'm just saying that it's not something we've never, ever said that's available. We've always looked for that availability.
And we've posted it, and we've never achieved, you know, more than, you know, 2 or 5% people camping. So it's not.
I think a lot of people like to be right there.
Unless you get it really next door. And even when we had it next door in Madison, like it was on the lawn of the convention center, there were like 10 tents.
There was actually less than that. I counted them.
Yeah.
But I'm not against camping. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying we have made it public that there's camping in the past.
I'm not against it either. I'm just saying that camping in Lexington is not a better deal than the housing in the dorms in Bowling Green because the number of people.
Yeah.
Sure. So, I mean, there, if one of the tangible benefits to going to Bowling Green is the fact that housing is cheaper, if people don't, I guess, subjects, they don't seem to be opting for the cheapest housing possible, then why should that be one of our main concerns here?
Well, for the vast majority of people who attend the festival and want their own room and a private bath and shower and a real bed, the $28 a day per person in Bowling Green is a real attraction versus $100 plus a night in a Hyatt in Lexington.
Right.
For those who want to camp, they can camp for $10 a head right outside the very same residence hall in Bowling Green and have indoor facilities for shower and bathroom on campus. So, you know, if there was ever a desire to test the proposition of whether camping, super affordable camping, will attract more people to IJA, Bowling Green is the chance to do it.
Right.
But I really believe that the IJA should not be in the business of choosing what type of accommodation people should choose or subsidizing one or the other. I mean, how about people who don't want to stay at the IJA hotel and stay at a motel 10 miles away? Are we going to provide a shuttle bus for them? They're just as interested in saving money as people who are camping. Well,
right, absolutely.
You know, where do we draw the line? We say that we have these options. These are the prices. Do what you want to do.
Sure. I guess one of my main concerns here, one of the things that, one of the reasons why I bring this up is that, you know, we as an organization have got a lot of flack for not offering camping in the past. And by showing that we're, you know, sort of being proactive, even, you know, albeit maybe a little bit belated here, in responding to that demand, you know, people aren't complaining that the IJA does not have deals with, you know, hotels further away from the site. There have been voice complaints about our not having some sort of an IJA-sponsored or IJA-supported or affiliated somehow campground.
Well, when camping is $10 a night or discount motels are $50 less than the IJA motel or hotel next to the convention center, I don't know that we need to offer a deal on it. I mean, if that's the choice you want to make,
sure,
they're there. And the IJA doesn't have to and in reality can't make a deal for discounted properties that are miles away when we have no idea what the demand will be.
Sure.
And the other thing we also have to keep in mind on the same vein is that, you know, we're getting the facilities at, you know, a special price because we meet a room block.
Right, yeah.
In our name. So, you know, if we don't meet our room block, we owe more money to that facility.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so, and I think what has concerned past boards with pushing any other facility too much. You know, if people research it and find it, at the first Winston-Salem, I posted six different campsites that were within 3 miles of Winston-Salem. And the feedback I got was that three people stayed in campsites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do put it out there, but, you know, we do have to fill our room block.
No one seems to be concerned about people who want to stay in a five-star hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't really see why the IJA has to be in the business of picking and choosing where people want to stay. We have contracted and can contract with hotels that are adjacent to the convention centers. And if that's not what you want, if you want a five-star or if you want a no-star and camp on your own, those properties are out there, and we can list them, we can tell you about them, or you can find them on your own, but I don't know that the IJA should be in the business of subsidizing or promoting one or the other, because the financial picture is just that we don't get any benefit from promoting anything other than the room or the hotel where we have the big room block. The reason that we make a big hotel contract for a room block, in case everyone isn't aware, is so that we can provide enough comp rooms for our VIPs and the festival director and the workshops and show director. Those costs would otherwise accrue to the IJA. And by satisfying our room block requirement at the adjacent hotel, we can take those costs out of our budget and offer a heavily discounted rate to all of our attendees. We were very fortunate to be able to make our room block in Rochester this year. And we picked up quite a few rooms at the Kaler Hotel, which was even lower priced than the Marriott or the DoubleTree or the Hilton. And undoubtedly, I mean, I know personally people who stayed miles away at discounted hotels and motels on the highway for $59 or $49 a night, and they didn't expect nor should the IJA be expected to provide that amenity? Those facilities are there if people want to get them.
All right.
And, you know, if they want to camp, they want to sleep in their car, they're up there.
Mike, is there a room block for Bowling Green if we use the dorms?
Well, that is another attraction of the campus model, Martin, in that they have so much capacity. They have 6,000 rooms on campus that we do not have to commit to any requirement to fill any rooms. And we can just sell as many rooms as we sell, and once registration closes, they will allocate rooms to our block.
Okay, great. So there's no problem there.
Correct.
Okay, Tom, question for you. Did you attend the Lexington Fest?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you've been in both places.
Right.
Which one do you think, in your personal opinion, do you think is most conducive to our championships and our gym facilities that we would need? Which one fits the IJA better?
I mean, I honestly don't remember too much about the facilities at Lexington so well. I mean, Bowling Green certainly looks like it. Like, the gym facilities they're big, they're great. We'd have one area. There are two separate gymnasiums. One is, I think it's 3 or 4 or 5 indoor basketball courts mm-hmm. on one end, so it's kind of like Mondo, for those of you that have been to Mondo before. And the other room, which is just adjacent to a corridor, it's a large indoor soccer and football field, so it's all covered in AstroTurf. So the AstroTurf area, I would imagine we'd want to have, that's where workshops would take place, just in different areas inside there, just for noise considerations or whatever. But I mean, from so much that I remember about Lexington, you know, Lexington was just, it's another big indoor facility, you know.
Right.
Just a big room. You know,
Well, Tom, I remember when we visited Bowling Green together that when we were in the track room, which had the basketball courts in it, we agreed that, and your idea was, that the room was so vast that we could simply allocate workshop space to the corners of the room.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
And not need to use the turf room at all, which had the AstroTurf on it, which would, of course, save us a lot of money.
Yeah, possibly. That is definitely a possibility. Yeah, I mean, both the facilities are fine. They're great. I don't remember what the theater was like in Lexington. The theater in Bowling Green certainly seems to me like it's something that would work for us.
Well, in Lexington, we would have better facilities adjacent to each other, all on the same level for the daytime events. Instead of in 2008, we had to change levels to go from workshop to gym.
Sure.
And in 2013, they're proposing all facilities to be adjacent for us on the same level. So once you've got to the gym, you just walk out the door and you're at the workshop room. And then, of course, the theater is the Lexington Opera House, which has been completely remodeled and upgraded since we were there in 2008.
Sure. Yeah, I mean,
all of that is basically connected to the Hyatt and across the street from restaurants, shops, and bars.
Right.
Okay. We've had a lot of discussion on this, and I know some of us are still battling with which way we want to go.
Kevin, any thoughts? Sorry, I just haven't heard from Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin.
True. I do think that somehow changing what we've been doing is really, I mean, it looks like we're looking at two pretty comparable options. Obviously, even with a reasonably successful year this year, I think that the finances are a big concern. I think we can make both work. Mike, you mentioned that they were both about the same. Which one is one cheaper?
Well, I think we know what Lexington would cost because we were there in 2008. We know what those costs were, and their costs for us in 2013 would be the same or a little bit lower, because we would be making use of a little bit better in 2013.
I thought that there was a food requirement in 2008 that was not going to be there this year.
That's right. And so I'm taking that out of the equation, Martin, for 2013. No food F&B requirement. And in Bowling Green, we have their price list. We know what they would charge for the things that we know we need. But, you know, this is something that's a little bit different for IJA, and there would be a lot of external rental costs for things like staging, chairs, things like that, that we really can only guess on right now. But the good news is that we don't have to commit to any hotel block. We don't have to commit to any food and beverage. And our facility rental costs are pretty reasonable for the week, around $15,000. So my best recommendation to the board is that the cost would be comparable to the two cities.
Okay. It is tough, and I am on the fence. I right now my intuition is do something different. I'm leaning toward the campus, but I'm not 100% on it. That's where I'm at.
That's where I'm coming from. This is Richard. I feel like we need to offer a different kind of look and say, if you can get here, it's going to be cheap for you. And camping is – I agree with Mike that we shouldn't really concern ourselves normally, you know, about every kind of housing, but I think it's a benefit that camping's right out the door. And this year, if you want to camp, it's going to be the easiest ever. I just think it's something to sell different and make us look like we're – not make us look like, but we were actually trying something different.
Richard, what are your concerns? What do you think about the, the location, the overall location, seeing as how Bowling Green is harder to get to by plane?
Yeah, I mean, the plane thing is a problem, but part of me says getting on a coach bus and going for 75 miles is not that big a hurdle. I mean, it's not different than flying into a different country and getting on a bus to go to a train to go to another place. I don't know. Everything can't be super easy. I think most people will drive. I think the stars will fly in and put them on a coach and send them down the line. I think this is kind of funny, Tom, because, you know, I consider myself the old man, and you the young guy, and I'm arguing for Bowling Green, and you're only arguing for Lexington. I find it funny.
Maybe it's just blessed. Lexington Fest Director did such a fine job, you know.
No, it did not. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, the theater is beautiful in Lexington. It's one of the best theaters we were ever in. I mean, Lexington has many – the city is great. I fell in love with Lexington. I just think a lot of people are going to go, oh, we've already been there, and I'm going to wait till the next year to go to San Francisco or wherever you choose. And I think if we could say we're going to have this different kind of fest in Bowling Green where we're going to have a communal party, I think we can pick up some people, you know, who we won't get. I don't know. I mean, you know, I thought we'd have a great year in Rochester, so, you know, I don't know what to tell you what I think.
And see, that's what concerns me, is it was a how long was the ride from the airport to Rochester?
60.
Wasn't that about an hour?
It was an hour, and it wasn't too bad, honestly.
It was almost exactly the same, and that's what I did.
Yep.
But the shuttles were going a lot more frequently.
I still have to question, is that why part of the reason why our numbers were low in Rochester, because the airport was so far away from the actual site? And that scares me about Bowling Green.
Let me make two points on that, Tim. One is that you could fly directly to Rochester, Minnesota. They have an airport, and they're served by 20 flights a day. So if you wanted to, many people did fly directly to Rochester, Minnesota. No matter how much money you have, you cannot fly to Bowling Green, Ohio. There is no airport there with commercial service.
Mm-hmm.
And so your closest choice is Detroit, and then you're faced with either renting a car, taking an IJA bus, or arranging a private limo shuttle. which is about $50 each way.
Beginning of that point I was going to make is that I could have flown into Rochester and it wouldn't have been particularly more expensive. The only reason I went into Minneapolis is because I felt like using frequent flyer miles to do it, and I couldn't do that into Rochester.
Correct.
And I went because it was cheaper, and I didn't mind the long drive.
Yeah. And I think anyone who went to Minneapolis and took the shuttle bus on Go Rochester Direct realizes it was not that big a deal. And Rochester Direct, unlike Bowling Green, provides continuous service, basically 18 hours a day, and has for 30 years. So it's not a problem getting a ride.
Yep. I think that's a big concern. Yep.
I just think from a marketing standpoint, like Kevin was saying, to say here's something different, I think will help us. Or as much as going back to the tried and true, I can't imagine that one will be wildly, I don't know. You know, you just don't know. But I just think trying to sell something new is beneficial at this point in our arc. But I don't know.
What do you think about that point, Tom?
Could you restate that?
Just doing something new. I mean, because I see that side as well.
Sure.
And that's why I first originally leaned towards Bowling Green hugely.
Sure.
Because I think doing something different, making it appeal to a bunch of hippies could be a really great thing. So, I mean.
Yeah, no, I definitely do see value in offering that format, you know, offering the college campus format. But when we're, I mean, I just kind of worry about, you know, like the idea is perception in a lot of areas that, you know, it's becoming irrelevant, it's becoming, you know, it's dwindling and everything, and then, you know, they're going to this kind of podunk city where nobody has heard of, and sure, it's, you know, there's camping in their dorms, but, you know, part of my concern is it's sort of heightening the perception that we're fading into oblivion almost.
I think that's just the opposite, Tom. I think
really?
all the young people give us the rap. We go to these hotel cities, and you got to be rich to go there, And now we have the opportunity to say, okay, here's your fest.
Exactly. And
you're saying
and
no.
You're saying
I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just my perception there. I certainly do see value in offering something new. But, and maybe, you know, I'm wishing for something that doesn't exist. You know, a similar set up as Bowling Green, but somewhere where you can actually fly into, or that's a little bit more accessible for everybody.
And it
you know,
could,
doesn't have the barrier of flying in, and you know,
and
not having the option of flying directly. You know, you have to fly and then catch a shuttle, or you know, rent a car or something. And I see a lot of people having that amount of not necessarily like you know, that level of planning or that level of something being the barrier, but you know.
I think
extra step being an issue for some people.
I think the market that wants the camping will be driving anyway, and the market that wants a dorm or a hotel will be flying anyway, and they can wrap their brains around getting on a coach bus and driving 75 miles. I think the exact market of the people that you're saying we're irrelevant, that's who wants this dorm stuff and the camping.
Sure.
Well, there's also the international piece to look at, or people coming
from California. I mean,
because people in the Midwest are.
I don't know how long it is.
Also, you said that this is a. Well, there's a complaint that this is a podunk city, but it's no more podunk than Fargo or Rapid City. Or Prim, Nevada. Ever heard of that? I mean, I hadn't before we had the IJ Fest there. So you know that argument doesn't hold any water.
I think I agree with Martin, and I think Fargo for a lot of people is the city of their the festival, the first Fargo I'm speaking of, which you know I think a lot of people that's their warmest festival almost in a way. I don't know. I think if you have a hippie fest, I think this is our best shot to say that we're actually trying to address that market that we maybe haven't been addressing.
Exactly.
But we're also, we had told Mike to look into San Francisco for possibly 2014, which would also be a college campus site.
Right.
So.
Well, I took that by way of seeing that the IJA may have to return to a college campus format, Kim, and therefore the goal would be to just find which geographic area you want to go to.
Right. Well, I like the idea of going to the college campus in San Francisco. It seems like it's a little easier to get to. But that's what I'm saying, that, you know, we're looking at Bowling Green, we're looking at possibly San Francisco the following year, both college campuses. My question to the board members is Bowling Green the right college campus to try this with?
I think it is. I think, in fact, every college campus might be good. It's what we used to do, and it was quite popular. We somehow got out of this market because the college campuses weren't available to us. I'm surprised they are to some extent now.
It's because the economy has actually hurt them, and now they're widening their scope to bring anybody in to fulfill those dates.
Great.
I'm saying it's a good thing. I mean, Burlington was a wonderful experience.
Well, let me ask the board members this. Do you all feel ready to vote on this now?
I think for Mike's sake, not just for Mike's sake, I think for everybody's sake, we have to vote sooner than...
Well, I'm saying, have we had enough discussion at this point? I think I believe we need to vote on this, but...
Yeah.
I agree. It's difficult, but I don't think it's difficult because I'm missing information. It's just difficult because it is.
Yeah.
It's tough. And we're actually going to need to amend the motion first to read which site. So if someone would like to make a motion for one site or the other.
I will move to amend the motion to... be the site of Bowling Green, Ohio.
I'll second that.
Okay. And just to follow procedure, any further discussion?
I just want to say that ultimately, you know, and there's a board member in me, but I think as a voting, I'm representing, you know, jugglers like myself. And to me, the college campus sounds fun. I'm not as deterred by the shuttle as others might be, and I do acknowledge that. But it sounds fun. It sounds like we're going to connect more with everybody. And I've been to nothing but Convention Center IJA since I joined this organization.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at.
Something different.
If we have no further discussion, is there anyone opposed to the festival site for 2013 being Bowling Green?
I'm opposed to it for matters of it just being so remote.
And I oppose as well.
So that means we don't have a majority, isn't that not here?
Well, we have 4-2 right now.
Okay.
I am very much on the fence.
Are you still deciding, Aaron? Both sides made really good arguments.
I know.
And I'm also somewhat on the fence, but I have to go. And I would be driving to either one, so it doesn't matter. They're both about 9.5 or 10 hours away from me. So.
And I'm just glad I'm not voting.
Yeah, I have no problem with Lexington. I hope everybody understands. I just think from a marketing and a perception and a real perception value that this is our opportunity.
Well, it sounds like we're all voting with our hearts as far as what we think is best for the IJA, which is what we should be doing. So that's a good thing.
Yep.
Our personal preferences are out of this. So kudos to everyone on that. So far, Tom and I have both opposed. Is there anyone else?
Well, Kim, may I ask that does that mean you're pro-Lexington?
If it's just between the two of these, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tom, same for you, Lexington?
Yeah. Same for me. And I mean, I have no doubt that it would be a fantastic festival in either location. But I just think that Bowling Green is too remote. If we were deciding between, you know, Bowling Green College Campus and some other college campus somewhere, I'm certainly for a college campus format, provided that it fits some other concerns
mm-hmm.
that we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's up to Aaron, Richard, and Dave to decide this.
Well, shall we do a roll call vote just to
okay.
have it on record?
Are we going to do the roll call vote on yes, no, Bowling Green, or a roll call vote on?
A roll call vote on the motion for Bowling Green.
Okay.
So it would be on the motion that's on the table right now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do a roll call. Kevin Axtell.
Yes. For Bowling.
Matt Hall is absent. Richard Kennison, motion
yes.
to approve Bowling Green?
Yes, for Bowling Green.
Dave Pawson?
Yes. A nervous yes.
Tom Wall?
I'm voting no for Bowling Green.
Aaron Stevens?
gosh. I'm going to have to say yes for Bowling Green.
And Kim Laird votes no for Bowling Green. But the majority of the board present has approved Bowling Green. So Bowling Green is our site for 2013.
I still love all of you.
Same here, guys. Alrighty, let's move on to an easier motion.
Are any of these motions?
Well, the next Wait. One's easier. A motion to approve the creation of an internet blog and the creation of a blog team led by Scott Seltzer with a formal proposal and budget to be presented to the board no later than the November board meeting, which would tentatively be November 16th. Someone to make that motion, please.
I'll make that motion, Kim and Nate.
And a second?
Second, Aaron.
Okay.
I want to say that this motion means almost nothing. Blog team is not being charged in this motion to do any particular thing except make a proposal. This is a wide open motion. I think the motion should say that the blog team is asked to come up with a proposal to or mechanism to publish articles or whatever it is that you want to do. A blog team is pretty much meaningless with no context here. So I would suggest you make the motion be a little more specific, and not in great detail, but to say what you want the blog team to propose.
Okay.
Something to do with a website, for instance.
The board member who made the motion.
Well, can I, while we're doing discussion, because
sure,
we're
go ahead.
Motion, I did put on the blog, the things that I felt would need to be included in that proposal.
Okay.
I'm trying to get to it really quick so I can read those off. But just, I mean, even knowing what that proposal entails, mainly my idea, I think, entailed having a timeline leading up to January 1st, which is the proposed go-live date, content proposals for what would be included in the content, as well as who would be providing that content, and kind of a timeline around that too. Short-term, medium-term, long-term plan.
Erin, can I interrupt for just a second?
Yeah.
I'm trying to say that you haven't put a baseline here. You haven't even said website in this motion, I think. You haven't said articles. Content, what does content mean? Tell us what the motion is about. Is it about getting, you know, lots of getting information out through the website in the form of articles? Or a blog to me means someone writes a little article every couple of days, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about real, you know, magazine-type articles, I think. But that should be embedded in this motion, at least some form of that. That's what I'm trying to say. Do you understand? All of what you're saying, I think what I'm trying to say is the information I want embedded in the motion has all been implicit. I want it to be explicit. It's been implicit in the discussions, but the motion is not saying all that stuff. And therefore, the motion, you know, really is charging this blog team, whatever that is, to do something that's not specific.
So
are you requesting for them to bring forth a kind of a quote or a bid, if you will?
I'm never looking for a quote. We're looking for.
But if I understand you right, Martin, you're saying that we need to include somewhere there that it's an internet blog. They need to present the board with a formal proposal. Maybe we can add this, including content sources for magazine-style articles.
That's not even, I mean, that's close. What do you want them to do? Let me ask you this. Just, you know, what do you want them to do? Do you want them to come up with a way to present articles on the website? If so, then say it.
Okay, articles, though. I'm not trying to be picky here.
But,
one thing that we haven't done is vote on a magazine thing yet, but I know this is part of the discussion, too, is that this is a concept of potentially replacing the magazine, looking at what our vote might be.
But also
creating a social outlet via the website for juggling information, not even just articles, but videos, publicity stuff, IJA information. So it's a blog that was covered juggling information through our website. I don't know how to word it correctly, but.
Maybe just to say that a way to present many forms of, many additional forms of juggling information, including, and make a list of what you just listed on the website on a regular basis.
Through a blog via the website.
Monthly contributions or something.
What do you think blog means? I want to know because that's what you're proposing.
Well, I'm using the terminology that Scott Seltzer posted. You know, he was the one that brought up the idea of blogging.
Right, that's why I'm asking what it means.
And
does anybody really know what it means?
An online journal.
An online journal.
A log of events and activities, of thoughts and knowledge. That's what I've seen blogs be. I don't know what the official term is.
Right. So it's a website component which is frequently updated with multimedia content.
Now, that's not a bad...
That one?
Yeah.
Multimedia action in there?
Multimedia is a great one.
Okay.
Well, I'll let you guys, choose something. I'm not real picky. I just wanted to get something going there.
Okay.
And I don't think it really affects the outcome of the motion. I just wanted the motion to be more representative to people who read the motion and say, what's this about?
Right. I'm not opposed to amending it. Any suggestions for the amendment?
Okay. Wait, before we get to that amendment, one other thing I think would be good to potentially add, I know it becomes a long motion then, but is because we're asking for a proposal on a budget, that means that they would not be able to work on this blog efficiently over the next month. And if a January timeline is what we're looking at, giving them permission to at least start, you know, recruiting content discussing it with content providers and recruiting potential people, hence the passing of the proposal.
I assume that since our webmaster is a volunteer and this team, this blog team is all volunteers, I assume, that the website could be set up to accept articles without you know, actually, before we actually recruit articles, before we have to consider paying for articles, and free articles could be added, that sort of thing. So there could, this could be all, you know, the initial stuff could be done with no cost at all. And
it's kind of
cost, when you and we can get volunteer writers for sure.
And it can be started. It could actually be, you know, in existence in a month or something before we start consider paying, you know.
Yeah, I'm not talking about paying. I'm just talking about recruiting content providers at this point, volunteer is my thought. But
yeah.
Because I know that's one thing Scott is requesting is the permission to start moving on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So not just creating a proposal and a budget, but actually start moving and recruiting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, contact them and do, you know. But I'm just saying that I don't think you need to – you can ask for a proposal in this budget, but I don't – I mean, in this motion, but I don't think the motion is to – I don't think the motion precludes stuff actually happening before any money is spent. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So it's not like –
and I'm not even talking about money at all. I'm still under the impression that everything's – but I'm saying we're asking for a proposal and a budget. We're not saying we're giving you permission to start working on a blog in this proposal as it's currently written. And I would like to give them permission.
Well, right, but I think nobody needs permission to start working on a blog. I could go do it right now, and you can't stop me.
But for the IJA.
Well,
sure.
Put it up on the
IJA might always eventually say, I don't want that. I'm not going to use it.
Right.
But unless I expect the IJA to pay me for it, I don't really need the IJA's permission. Right.
No, but you need the IJA permission to put it up on the IJA website. And I think we'd like to have it up on the IJA website as soon as possible, even in experimental forms. It can change, you know, half a dozen times before we decide what we like.
Right. So
that's just sort of format.
I'm just saying that we're not just doing a motion saying that we want this proposal and budget, but also go for it. Start working on it to recruit potential content providers. But I don't know if that's necessary. If not, then we can move on.
So you're wanting to come up with a design of a designed way of providing multimedia content on the website, basically, and to start doing that maybe experimentally. Is that what you want?
Yeah, and ultimately to have it integrated into the new website when that takes shape
in a
more prominent way.
Well,
and
I think if we include in the motion that the team will be led by Scott Seltzer with a formal proposal including content sources for magazine-style articles and other juggling information, video, photos, as well as other multimedia content, you know, we're giving Scott permission here. In my eyes, we're giving Scott permission to get started on this.
Okay. Cool.
I don't know if everybody else thinks that that's included there, but I see.
Well, put it in the motion, and then it will be included. Just, you know, put that in the motion. Put whatever you think you want done in the motion, and then read the motion and have people discuss it. I think people will support it, so I just, you know, once that's in the motion formally, then it'll be fairly clear.
Okay, so what if we amended the motion to read motion to approve the creation of an internet blog and the creation of a blog team led by Scott Seltzer with a formal proposal which will include content sources for magazine style articles and other juggling information, video, photos, as well as other multimedia content and budget to be presented to the board no later than the November board meeting. Scott Seltzer has permission to start on this project immediately. We can just add that to the end of it. It's a very long motion.
I'd say we could cut everything and just put multimedia.
Okay.
That covers all of it.
So including...
I think it doesn't hurt to say to expound on what the multimedia includes. I think it's okay to be a little redundant.
Okay.
So that people know what you're really talking about. Some people might interpret multimedia just mean video or video and sound.
All right. Any other suggestions?
All right. If there's no other suggestions, I will move to so amend the motion.
Okay.
Just described.
Okay. And second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll go to vote. Oh, go ahead, Aaron.
Were we creating a team as well? Would this be?
Well, and it says the creation of a blog team.
Headed by, right.
Yep, that's in there.
Is that, well, I mean, is that going to be created by Scott, essentially? Or are we talking about a team now?
You mentioned Scott Seltzer in the motion, right? But nobody.
Scott Seltzer is the team head, but no other team member, yeah. So, I mean,
right.
Just to include Dave Pawson would be my nomination, who has shown interest.
No, I have no problem with Scott. I just wanted to know if you wanted to include the other people who have shown interest. I guess Dave?
That's
what
I'm saying. Yeah, is sure. Including Dave Pawson as well.
Okay.
And I don't know how we'd include, but I mean, this is a motion to create a team as well as, yeah, having him head the team. But
so it would be a blog team, and then in parentheses after blog team, I would put Dave Pawson.
Part of it at this point.
David Landown.
Yeah, if he's, I haven't ever heard from him, but I just know he's willing to help with the technical side, according to Scott.
Right, and was there anyone else that expressed interest?
And, you know, you can have them recruit other people as needed.
As needed.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And others as needed. And that'll be in parentheses after creation of blog team. Kevin, is that amendment okay with you?
That amendment is just fine. I'll move to so amend again.
Okay, and a second, please.
I'll second it again.
Okay. And any further discussion? If not, we'll go to a vote. Anyone opposed to the motion to create the Internet blog team? Any abstentions? The blog team was a go. I will email Scott right after the meeting. Okay.
Can you please copy me on that? Because again, I will certainly be talking, and I actually don't have contact information for him.
And just copy Dave Landown, David Landown.
That's what I was going to. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder, though.
In fact, copy me as well.
Sure. And then item C, which was on the agenda that I had sent out to the board members, Matt has asked that be removed. As he said, that would be a gentleman's agreement there rather than being a motion. So that brings us to item D, motion to approve that the last issue of the current contract for Juggle is the last issue of Juggle. Not sure if that motion is clear to everybody.
That sounds a little unclear.
Okay.
The last issue. So the last issue in the current contract.
Right.
Which we have one issue left before the contract ends.
Correct. It would mean that December 31st of 2011, there would be no magazine after that.
It almost seems like it would be
a date for a better or for a different thing.
Okay.
It almost seems like it would be more to the point and less controversial to just say that we're moving to not renew the current contract or sign another contract at this time.
Okay.
I agree.
So, yep. Motion to not... how did you put that, Dave? I'm sorry.
To not renew the current contract or sign an alternative contract at this time.
Okay.
I will make that motion.
I will second that motion.
Very good. Okay. Now, a little bit of discussion. I just got an email from Alan Howard as we were starting this meeting, which I forwarded to everyone, where the bottom line, he has some really good things to say in the email, so when you have a chance to read it, please do. But about halfway down his email, he says, I believe we can produce 4 issues per year of a magazine for a total of $40,000. That's obviously $10,000 per issue and well below the total amount members pay in dues each year. A little further down, if the board believes that fewer issues is still a necessary route to take, we can do two per year for $25,000 total.
I think in our present state, and this is just my opinion, I think in our present financial state, we can't justify that. And two, we're going to get a backlash anyway from any members who are going to be upset about the loss of the magazine regardless. I think $25,000 is way too much to even consider with our present financial situation.
Yes, I found his argument kind of emotional and touching, but not really compelling.
The one thing I might be interested in and seeing if the rest of you are is I think it's better to rip the Band-Aid off, but some kind of last hurrah beyond the December, like one issue after that. But again, my opinion is to just end it with the present contract.
Which is also what the motion says at this time,
mm-hmm.
Unless we amend it.
I'm stuck once again because I know financially we are in a very difficult position. And yet, even I, as a member of the IJA, am sitting here thinking, you know, if there is no magazine, what the heck do I get for my membership dues? A blog is wonderful. A blog is absolutely wonderful. But honestly, it's not something I can take to Juggle Club or to anywhere else and say, hey, check this out.
Well, you can if you print an article. Or take it on your iPad.
True.
That's the future. That's what we're looking at in the long term. And we have to, inevitably, we have to find that content to please the members anyway. We may not know exactly what it is yet, but it's got to be found. We might as well start looking and trying things. I mean, I guess I get a little over-emotional. I think that the magazine has been a drain for a while. It's got lots of pluses. I'm a juggler for life, and I do like the magazine. But, yeah.
I'm also skeptical. Maybe it's because I'm not into blogging myself. So I know the blog will be a great thing for some members, but I'm just not sure if that's going to come off really well.
I think it can, and I think if we market it right, it really will. But I also think what the blog does is it reaches out to jugglers as a whole as opposed to just our members, and I think that should be our ultimate mission is we're serving all jugglers and not just our members. And ideally, hoping that that means that more people will, you know, be in favor of the IJA and become members because of that, because we're really reaching out this has a chance to reach way more jugglers than what we're currently reaching.
But if
right.
we're going to give it to non-members as well as members, then why do I need to become a member?
Member-only sections of really cool, cool content that only members get to access. I mean, that's, you know, what's
been
proposed.
You attend the festival.
You attend a festival. You're promoting the support of juggling through international juggling, helping jugglers in countries that can't use it. I think, you know, we've talked about it before, but playing on the sympathy card with some of the programs that we've started implementing is a good way to make members feel like they're supporting a really cool thing in the juggling community.
Kim, you said you're not into blogs, and this is why I asked what a blog meant earlier. Do you ever read the New York Times online?
I read it
New
a few
York
times.
Times. I've read other newspapers online, but
okay.
Yeah.
So same thing. I mean, those newspapers have articles. I read the New York Times, you know, and maybe some other papers, but it's hopefully going to be a similar thing. We have good articles.
Mm-hmm.
Call us the Juggling Times or whatever, you know. And maybe that's a good name for it. I don't know if that's part of the news. But it can be, you know, it's not just a blog where somebody, you know, writes a column. It's articles that are good to read, and they're the same articles you might have read in a magazine. That's the idea anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will be. I mean, there'll be shorter articles. You know, it's easier to put stuff in onto the website. We'll have all sorts of range of articles there.
It'll all be more frequent. It is going to be coming, you know, every week as opposed to every quarter. Having more access. Yep. Articles and also, I know I've talked about this on the page or on the blog thread, but video, you know, really learning how we can use that more.
And I guess that's part of my quandary here and part of my hesitation on it is, you know, I know Alan has to be on the contributors on the those who write articles now, he has trouble getting them in, you know, and that's every quarter.
Right.
So what happens when the content stops coming in? You know.
This probably doesn't help you feel a whole lot better, but even if there was never, ever going to be a blog, I still wouldn't think it made sense to spend this much money on a magazine.
Sure, too. Yep.
And probably just the English teacher in me, too, that is just, you know, married to the print word. So, you know.
Yeah, I do have to go on record to say I disagree with what Dave just said. I think, what is the membership fee going to be once we start this blog? Is it going to remain at 35 or whatever it is now? I don't even know.
At 40.
40. I just don't think you're going to get people to pony up $40 for nothing. And again, I'm not sure the magazine gets people to pony up $40. So it's a huge quandary. But I think we're going from something to nothing. Now, hopefully in a month and a half or 2 months we're going to have something. But I don't know. I think Alan did a very good job of trying to reduce his price. You know, to me, I just got this too, Kevin. I'm kind of intrigued by the two issues for $25,000. But, you know, if we don't have the money, we don't have the money. But I will be voting against the proposal. But that's just me making a stand. So.
And Richard, you and I have talked about this in the past. You know, we both seem to be. You know, like the print word, it's easier to hand out when you go places. You know, it's, yes, I have an iPad. I can show it to people, but I'm not going to hand them my iPad to take with them on the plane that they're going on, which I have done before. I did that in Sparks.
Pardon?
People, when I went on the site visit to Sparks, I gave them three of my Juggle magazines. So, you know, and just sending them to a website doesn't work. I tried to send my eighth graders to a website. It doesn't work. Some circles, but, you know.
I'd feel better about the whole thing if we already had the website. Part of the whole idea I thought was we're going to have this transition period where we would still have a magazine and then we'd get this website. So part of me is like, we're going from something to nothing tonight.
Where would this money come from?
I don't know.
You could be literally talking about, okay, let's pull more money out of the Life Member Fund for the magazine. I mean, where is this money going to come from?
Right. We're not going from something to nothing. We're going from a loss to nothing.
That's right.
I appreciate that, Dave. I do. I totally financially – I'm a fiscal conservative. Trust me when I tell you that. So I understand what you're saying.
And I understand the financial part of it, too. I think Richard and I are coming from the same section here when I would prefer to have seen a lot more overlap.
Yeah.
Oh, I certainly would have, too.
Yeah. And I would, I mean,
if we had the money, this would be a whole different conversation, I think, for a lot of us, you know, and I was totally for the magazine in the beginning, but right now we really don't have the funds to keep going with it right now. We can't afford, I mean, yeah, $10,000 for our bookkeeper, and $25,000 is a lot more than that.
I think you, Tim and I think you're both, Tim and Richard, you're both totally justified in your opinion. I think it's
totally.
No need to defend your opinion about it or to try to change your mind. I'm just trying, so for some form of progress, are we at 4-2 here? Tom, what's your opinion?
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone's got this terrible echo.
Oh, that was your phone.
Yeah. Could you repeat that loud and slow?
I just wanted to know if you were basically getting back to the motion, if you were for it, ending the contract this year, or if you want to exceed Juggle Magazine, go further.
Sorry, this is. I think I should probably try calling back into the conference because I'm not hearing. Not hearing you.
Anything? What's your opinion on the magazine?
Oh, thank you. right now, I guess like what I understand Richard to be saying is that I mean I would like there to be more of a transition, but I also agree with Dave that there is a. You know, it's not like we're going from something to nothing. We're going from lost to nothing. If I heard that correctly. Yeah, I mean, I love the magazine. I think it's a great benefit. I think that it's possible that calling this new site service a blog might be a little bit, I don't want to say misleading, but, you know, we could call it something else. But that's the point that Martin was bringing up, that it's more of an online version that is updated frequently of the magazine, just in a digital format. And so long as, you know, like paid content, I think this is a conversation that's happened on online, you know, so long as most of the paid content is something that members get to see, you know, like it's in a members-only section they get to log in to access some of the question of, you know, what does the membership get you? Well, I mean, effectively the membership is still getting you membership or, you know, access to a magazine or access to magazine articles. They just don't happen to be printed up and delivered to you once a month. They're available for you to access online, you know, whenever you want to as they come out. So in some ways it's kind of more of a, you know, an RSS feed instead of a, you know, sort of an off the cuff kind of blog roll kind of thing. That makes sense. But yeah, I mean, at the moment, financially speaking, I don't see the magazine as a viable, sustainable future for us unless we can find money somewhere somehow. So
that's
what I think about the magazine.
I just have and this is just my gut feeling right now that we're going to lose even more members by not having a magazine. And what do we do for our life members that aren't hooked into the internet?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that going solely digital will alienate
a portion
of our membership. And that needs to be something that, I mean, we need to figure that out. You know, if that means printing up all the content at the end of every year and doing the yearbook kind of thing like has been discussed online, if that means, you know, having some sort of a quarterly newsletter that's just, you know, like a broadsheet kind of thing that we send out, you know, and just, you know, that's cheaper than a magazine, and it could just be, you know, a couple of pieces of paper that are, you know, laid out and put in an envelope and sent out, as a way of keeping people up to date in their mailbox. I definitely think that we need to have some sort of physical presence in the, you know, in the postal lives of our membership, but I don't think that needs to be as large of an expense as the magazine itself.
See, I think I could. I don't care at all about a bulletin or newsletter. What I like about Juggle is the professional level it is.
Sure.
So yeah, I can go online. You can give me a blog roll and tell me all the festivals. That's great. That works fine for me. What I liked about Juggle Magazine is the tangible perception of, wow, these jugglers must be serious. They must, they're not, I don't know. I mean, again, we're kind of arguing in circles. I think this is a foregone thing, but I think we're going to miss that tangible historical document that we've produced for jugglers all this time.
Sure.
I totally agree. I'll miss it. I know I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aaron, I look forward to you being on a cover, you know.
Oh.
Tell you the truth, I really did. So.
Yeah, that was one of my dreams, and that's the hard thing. That's why I was like, no, we can't get rid of the magazine when people started talking about it. I was like, no, that's like my dream is to be on the cover, and I think it's a lot of people's dream, and when it does happen, it's like such an awesome moment, you know, and that's where, yeah, I really feel it is a sad thing to lose, and it is something that makes people, you know, feel that professionalism of juggling.
Sure.
Yeah, so, and also, I mean, if we suddenly were rolling in the money, it doesn't mean that it couldn't change later as well. This is, you know, currently it's not something financially feasible. It's not forever necessarily, and that's up to future boards down the road when there is more money. But
it sounds like there's a lot of support, and in order to support this, I would need to definitely see a real working proposal of where this money's going to come from. I think it is completely irresponsible at present state to say, okay, yeah, let's throw another 25 at it. Where is that going to come from? Is it a fundraiser? Okay, maybe. But we need a tangible plan for that money.
Right.
Okay, let's do it again, because we've been doing it, and we're going to keep sinking the ship. It's like putting more water in an already sinking ship. Where
does
the money come from?
Kevin, I agree with you. But I think on some level the argument you just made could be made to say we shouldn't have a festival next year because we lost $20,000 on this year's festival. And I'm not indicting Mike on that at all. I'm just saying on paper we haven't been good at festivals in the past. So I totally understand what you're saying. But I think it's just a question of what it is we want to be and do as an organization. And of course, you got to find the money. I'm not discounting that in any real way, but yeah.
And I agree. We do need to have some sort of plan as to where the money would come from. And Aaron and I kind of talked about this last night as well. We actually are working without an operating budget right now. We've never sat down and hammered out an operating budget. So for 2012. I think that's something we definitely need to do and look at where every penny of a member's membership dues is going. And if we do that, we may be able to find the funding to do that. So perhaps this is a motion that's only in place for 3 or 4 months, and there may be a lapse in one or two issues of Juggle, but we can bring it back right away. And I can see that, and I could probably go for that. But I'm sorry, gang, in my heart, I'm a print person.
Sure.
And I'm just way too afraid of how many people we're going to lose by saying, that's it, Juggle's done.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I understand the other side, too.
Yep,
sure.
We're in a catch-22.
Yeah.
So once again, we've got a hard decision to make. So is there any further discussion? If not, should we do this roll call since it sounds like we're kind of split? Is that all right with everyone?
Yep.
Sure.
Okay. So the motion is on the table to not renew the current Juggle contract or to enter into a contract with anyone else at this time.
Right. So in other words, putting it on hiatus for the time being.
Well,
yes.
That's not what the motion is. There's
no, the motion is to just...
So we're not accepting the next contract.
We're not accepting any contract.
It doesn't mean that we won't ask for another contract in the future, but we're not accepting the current contracts.
Right.
Sure.
Okay. Everybody clear? Okay, let's do roll call vote. Kevin Axtell.
Yes.
Matt Hall is absent. Richard Kennison.
No.
Dave Pawson.
Yes.
Tom Wall.
Yes.
Aaron Stevens.
Yes.
And Kim Laird votes no. But with 4 votes, the motion passes. Once again, still love you guys all.
Absolutely.
Likewise.
Okay. Any other motions to bring up tonight? It's been a rough night.
Gosh.
Stressful night. If not, under Varia, I had a Lake Conneaut proposal to be discussed. I have not finished putting final touches on that at all. I will do that within the next week and just send it out to the board by email for comment, and I'll post it online as well, again, for comment. Aaron and Tom wanted to set a date for us to possibly get together by phone again next week. Is that correct, Kang?
Next week would be ideal. Yeah, or when people are available.
Yeah, to discuss the goals document, is there any time that's better for some than others?
Yeah, I have a couple things going on in the evening next week. So 5 o'clock Western Standard Time, Pacific, would be really preferred for me. There's several dates I can't make it if it's any time after 6.
Okay. So, Aaron, Tom, go ahead, throw a date and a time out there.
Leave that up to Aaron, too.
Was there anyone else? I mean, Wednesdays tend to work for people, so it could be a week from today. If Wednesdays
are actually really horrible for me.
Okay.
I make them work, but...
How about Tuesdays?
Tuesday is better.
Is better?
Better.
Better.
Is more good.
I meant worse. Better? More bad?
Yeah, as long as it's in, you know, the early, any time after 5 o'clock Eastern time there.
Okay. Good. Tuesday, 5 o'clock, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, if that works for everyone, that would really work best for me. I could do 5:30, but I got to go at 6, so.
So we want to keep it, yeah, and we want to make it fairly short. And just a little word on this. It's totally a working document. This is just stuff, you know, that I thought. I've already been making some amendments to it with stuff that Dave has suggested because he had some really good input. I'd love to get some online input before we have this discussion. Dave so far has been the only one who responded, and Tom sent me his revisions as well. But, yeah, just so that we can really keep it short and concise. And everyone understands the main goal of having this strategic plan, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And one other thing is I would like to potentially talk to each person individually, maybe not necessarily before Tuesday, but sometime in the near future, just to kind of get a feel for where people are at as far as time commitment to the IJA, like how much can you realistically give per week to the IJA, and also what roles within the IJA and within our strategic plan are you actually passionate about and would you be willing to put your time towards? Just so that we know that each person's in the right place, doing the right things to get that strategic plan in action. So is that something folks would be willing to do with me
sure.
as well?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Sweet. Then look for an email from me soon scheduling times with each of you for a chat.
Okay. I have one more thing for Varia, and that is Ivan has sent me the master of the DVD for the fest. Again, in the current financial situation, I really don't want us to get like 200 or 300 copies of this thing run off, just be sitting in our store. I had just an idea to throw out there that we maybe only do it by pre-sale. For anyone that might want it, or we just hang on to the master for now. What do you guys think we should do at this point? Just hold on to the master or do pre-sales only?
So having not actually been through this before, at this point, do we have any costs beyond what we pay per disk to burn them and to ship them?
We have Ivan's cost that we have to get his check out to him.
Well, right, but that's already sunk cost. That's already
sunk cost, but no, if we just sit on this DVD, it costs us zero.
Right, but I meant, suppose we say, okay, we want to make one disk. Do we have to pay things other than what it actually costs to get somebody to print it and ship it?
No.
Okay.
There's a lot of print-on-demand DVD replication and duplication companies, and the basic deal is we earn a little less per DVD, but we never pay for excess in supply. Someone orders one DVD, they get one DVD. We order 10, we get 10. It's about $1.25, $1.50 per DVD at a competitive rate. An example company would be Kunaki, K-U-N-A-K-I. It's just a thought. I mean, because I think our people should be able to get the DVD.
Kevin, was Kunaki the company you sent to me last year?
Yes.
Okay.
But they're just an example of the print-on-demand Asian industry, which is huge and competitive.
Okay. Well, let me look into that and see if we can maybe go through them to do a copy-on-demand type thing.
That'd be cool. That'd be great.
Overhead. We wouldn't have to pay for shipping. We wouldn't have to pay for any of that.
I'd also like to look into, and I did this after Sparks, was I did contact Wes, but maybe I'll contact Michael Karras too. See what companies they've been using for the downloads. I mean, their downloads are huge, and maybe we can do it even with this DVD. So I'll investigate that as well and report back to the board. What was that?
I said in four different pieces, like Matt was suggesting, if we need to, you know, if it's longer than 45 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll investigate that and then report back to the board on both Kunaki as well as the possible downloads.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, any other things for Varia? If not, next meeting on the third Wednesday in November is November 16th.
That works.
Works for me.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll be in Mexico.
That entire week.
For that entire week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phones in Mexico? No, I'm kidding.
What's that? Phones in Mexico. Not in the middle of a field.
We could make it the week earlier if everyone would be all right with the 9th. That would be 3 weeks from now.
That's fine.
That isn't any better or worse for me, so that's fine if that helps.
Okay. Is that all right with you, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm looking at my schedule right now. Yes, 9th would be fabulous.
Okay. Let's call it for the 9th. That'll be fine. 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, good for everybody still. Okay, we need a motion to adjourn then, if there's nothing else.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, second?
I'll second that.
Okay.
Hey, can I ask Tom a question real quick?
Go for it.
Are you in St. Louis?
Tomorrow, I'll be in St. Louis tomorrow. You should go to club. Go to club tomorrow.
I have to go to court tomorrow. I'm a witness in a police incident, but I might come afterwards. So, okay, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, I'll be in St. Louis tomorrow until Monday afternoon, I believe.
Excellent, though.
Yep.
Okey-dokey. So we have our motion to adjourn. We have our second. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Meeting is adjourned at 11:14 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hooray!
Thank you, gang.
And I'll see a few of you in St. Louis in a few days.
Oh, great, Dave. That's great.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Good. Yeah, perfect.
All right.
Okay, good night, everyone.
Bye, Kevin.
Good night.
Yeah.
Let's talk soon.
Cool. Can I call you on your cell in about 15?
Yes.
That'd be perfect.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Okay, bye.